Hello and welcome, listeners. This is Rise Above the Void. Tips and tricks for the starting artist. Nienke van der Wal is founder of Young Collective Circle. Their aim is to inspire a new generation of art collectors. She also hosts a podcast series in which she talks with art collectors. On her website, she says she's an experienced strategist with over 18 years of experience in the cultural sector and is full of entrepreneurial spirit. She offers her clients consultancy, coaching and training in the field of cultural entrepreneurship. She also teaches and gives workshops about entrepreneurship and marketing. This for instance for Cultuur en Ondernemen and various art academies. In a previous episode, we talked about grants and subsidies. But as we learned in that episode, it's not smart and realistic to rely solely on that. Most artists own their income for a greater part by selling their work. This episode is about reaching an audience that is interested in buying your work. It's all about marketing your work, how to build your audience and maintain a relationship with them. So, Nienke, thanks for joining me. I'm really looking forward to expose all the knowledge that you have. To start off, can you tell me a little bit about your personal life? Where do you live? And what is your favorite meal?
I live in Amsterdam North. I've been in Amsterdam for, I think, maybe over 20 years now. So I consider myself an Amsterdammer, finally. My favorite meal is probably something Asian, I would say. Oh, I wasn't expecting that question, and it's quite early. So I'm thinking breakfast at the moment, I love as well.
What did you have for breakfast?
I just had some granola, which I made myself. But I love eggs. I think that's my favorite product in the whole world. So on a weekend day, that's definitely what I would eat. And to get back to your question about what my favorite meal, besides the maybe breakfast, probably maybe sushi or just a nice, good noodle dish with a little bit of spice.
I saw on a website you published on that the core question that you ask yourself is why? Can you explain me why that is?
Yeah, so the why question is from this framework that I think you also discussed in a previous episode by Simon Sinek, and it's called The Golden Circle. And it's quite old. It's a TED Talk. You can find it on YouTube. And it's interesting because he talks about flat screen TVs like it's super futuristic. And of course, now that's all we have. So bits of it are a bit old fashioned, but it still holds very true to this day that a lot of people, companies, but also politicians, artists, etc., they talk about what they do. And sometimes they also talk about how they do it. So like a unique selling point, how they're different from others. But not a lot of people talk about why they do what they do. And his theory, and he also has some biological arguments for why this is also true in our brains. His argument is that a lot of people will tack on to why you do what you do more than just the what and the how of it. So for me, it's really important to understand why you do what you do, especially when you work in the arts. It's hard work for not a lot of money, but yet every day we get up, or most days anyway, and we're ready to get out of bed and work really hard to make art, or to make art accessible, in my case, to a lot of people. And it's interesting to figure out what is your deepest motivation for that.
So it resonates with other people, the why question.
Exactly, yeah.
It's biological, you say.
Exactly, yeah. So Simon Sinek says it's in your brain. So it's the limbic part of your brain. So it's a part that's not responsible for language, if I'm explaining it right. But it's a part that's responsible for feeling. So that's also why when you look at the commercial world, a car brand maybe, I stole this example, but a car brand may be promoting a sense of freedom and not necessarily saying it's the best car. It goes really fast, it's really pretty, because any car, any car brand could say these things. So a lot of times when I ask artists about their why, they say something like, I just have to create, it's so important for me that I have to create, otherwise I would die, which is true, I think, for any artist. So that's not a really good why, because it's not personal.
And to project this on young artists, is it hard for them to have the answer to that question?
It is, I think, because also, of course, when I started working 18 years ago, I also didn't think, okay, so this is going to be my why. But it's important to think about it nonetheless. Also because, I don't know, oftentimes when I work with younger artists or artists that are just starting to think about themselves in a more entrepreneurial way, a lot of time artists get a little bit pissed off at me in the beginning because they say, well, it's all about the art and you can't think about business. And then I ask them, well, how are you doing? Are you paying your rent? Do you have to have a side hustle or are you living from your art? And then say, no, I'm not living from my art. I never sell anything. And I think, well, that's why it's important to be entrepreneurial. And it doesn't mean that when you are creating art, you're thinking about the market or the art world. Creating art should be, in my opinion, autonomous. It should be something that you do because that's what you're good at. That's what you're often trained for. When you go to the academy, you study art. You're a professional artist after you're done. So that's the part that is autonomous. Of course, it relates to the world around you and to other artists, but that's autonomous. But then when it's created, then you have to find a way to connect it to the world, or you can keep it in your studio, but then you'll never, you know, sell it or have it in a show. So it's important, I think, to know once you've autonomously created your artworks, how to then connect it to the market. So I'm not trying to tell artists, you should look at the market and if blue works sell amazing, then you should create more blue works and you'll be super successful. No, it's really about knowing your own why, creating your work, and then finding a way to share that work with the world. And a lot of times artists will say, well, my work has to speak for itself, and that's really a great thing to want. And it's sort of the polar opposite of what marketing is, because in marketing, of course, you're going to explain it a little bit. And it's hard to talk about your work sometimes, but thinking about this why question, which I see sort of as an umbrella where all of your art fits under, it always is tied back to your why. It can really help you communicate about your artwork.
It's sort of getting out of bed and ask yourself, why am I getting out of bed?
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. Why am I working so hard to create this art? And it can be very big reasons. Sometimes, you know, artists are concerned about the climate or about racism or about other big injustices, but it can also be small. It can also be about human connection or connection between humans and nature, or not necessarily small topics in itself, but it doesn't always have to be world-changing. It can also be small. And it often is something that comes from your own personal life, something you've experienced and something that you're now dealing with through your art.
If artists don't want to seek for that answer, the answer to the question why, can they be good artists?
I think they can be good artists, but I don't know if they'll be successful in a business way, if you will. And I think especially for young artists, because there's so many examples, of course, out there of artists that do work super commercially and are very popular. And I don't think you should be looking at those artists like Damien Hirst or Jeff Koons, because it's a whole different ball game. I think even for yourself, it's interesting to ask you that question, why, right? Not just to put out to the world. But I think, for me, because I also collect art, as a buyer, every work that I have is made more interesting because the interaction I have with the artist. And yes, I see things in it for myself. I have my own thought process about it. But the best part about it is getting to know, whether it's through a gallery or through the artist themselves or through just reading about somebody, it's just, it makes an artwork more interesting when you know the process an artist has gone through, the research they have done, sort of the bigger story of that work, and also how it fits into their sort of oeuvre, like under their umbrella. So I think from a buyer's perspective, it's really important to be able to communicate that as well.
So as I said in the intro, reaching an audience is important. But who exactly is this audience? Who can it be?
Yeah, it's interesting because, the internet, of course, has been around for a while, but it has given the artists so many opportunities to reach this audience themselves. I think mostly the internet changed that. So before, if you didn't have a gallery, it was really hard to connect with the art world as a whole. And now that you have Instagram, you have all these different platforms, it's also easier. It puts a lot more responsibility on the artist, but it also makes it easier to get that network yourself. And the way I always explain who that audience is that you can think of the art world as a whole and the art market as being a part of it. So the art world as a whole, the artist is a part of it, people that buy and sell art are a part of it, which is the market, but also curators and critics are a part of it. And so as an artist, you'll be connected, or preferably be connected, to everybody that's in the art world, because curators and critics are not necessarily part of the market, but they influence the market. Because if a curator gives you a big show, or if a critic writes a positive review, it will change your position also on the market. And on the market itself, it's only the buyers and the sellers, which traditionally were galleries and collectors, but now artists are becoming more and more also their own sellers. And also who is a collector is really changing a lot. So as an artist, I think it's important to figure out, how am I going to make my money? Do I want to make only works in commission? Do I want to make art in public space? Do I want to be in museums? Do I want to be in collections? And then, of course, a lot of people will say, sure, all of the above. But then you have to figure out, who are those people and how am I going to connect with them?
Would you say it's fair to say that there is like a real difference between the offline and online world?
Yes, a huge difference, I think, because even when you look at sales online and offline, right now what you see, or at least the latest reports that I personally have read, is that artworks up to a certain amount, let's say up to maybe 500 or 1,000 or 2,000 euros, are easily sold online. And then the really high-end ones that are usually sold online through auctions. So, you know, Andy Warhol, and just works that are in the secondary market, so works that are being resold. Those do very well online, but that whole sort of thing in the middle, people want to see and experience, and that's why, you know, exhibitions, museums, galleries are still also very important. So I would say also the online market is for a lot of people a place where they can figure out what's out there, what do they like, who are they following. A lot of people will follow an artist on Instagram and see their development and just sort of wait for that work to pop up where they go, ooh, that's really interesting, and then go see it in real life. So the online market, of course, it's changed during the pandemic, and I'm curious to see if it's going to change back now that hopefully we won't have to go back into lockdown ever again. But yeah, the whole online market is still, sort of separate in that respect from the offline market. Yeah.
The pandemic changed that, you said. Are more people buying online now than like before the pandemic? And is the price that people pay online is getting higher as well?
Yeah, I think a lot more people started buying online, but also collectors started becoming more aware of sort of their role. That's also how we see it at Young Collector Circle, that collectors are really important for the art world, because before a big museum sees your merit and wants to program you, oftentimes collectors have already bought the work. So in a way, collectors are important for an artist to sort of support them through their career at points where they're not as wide known already.
So yeah, I want to dive a little bit deeper in the still in the on and offline world. Like the offline world is galleries, museums. What do I forget?
The offline world is galleries, museums, presentation of project spaces. Sorry, presentatieinstelling in Dutch, but project spaces. Also, biennales like the Venice Biennale and other big art events like Manifesta and Kassel, Documenta Kassel. And so those are sort of the offline spaces to present art. To buy art, it's mostly the galleries, of course. sales exhibitions, spaces like SBK and Hayden that are parts rental and parts program exhibitions as well. Yeah, and of course, art fairs. And then for the secondary market, which is the resale of artworks that have already been sold once or five times or 100 times, the auction houses. And then online, all of these spaces also have a way to be present and also to sell art. So oftentimes a lot of galleries will sell art also through their website. There are platforms like internationally Artsy and in the Netherlands and Belgium also Gallery Viewer, where galleries post the works by artists that are for sale. And a lot of artists sell work now also through their Instagram.
How about TikTok?
And TikTok, yes. I'm not sure about the sales on TikTok. I have to say I just joined TikTok 2 weeks ago. I always thought...
And you are already hooked or not?
Yeah, I was opening it when I arrived here because I posted something this morning. I have to admit, because I'm 44, so my 12-year-old daughter is my content creator for TikTok. Mm. So I send her stuff and she makes TikTok-type videos for it. But it's, I mean, TikTok is really interesting because... At first, it felt like it was more for like silly dances and people doing stuff like that. But now there are all these sort of sub-communities within TikTok, like Art Talk, which is super interesting. So I don't know about sales on TikTok, but it's definitely a really cool platform also for artists to present themselves and present their work. And I mean, just also to have a little bit of fun and play around. I always see social media also for artists as a way to be playful because, you know, it's not like if you make a book or even a website, you know, then you have to get everything exactly right. But on social media, even if you hate later the TikTok that you posted, you can delete it and people will forget about it. So yeah, it's a cool platform, I think.
Failures are allowed.
Yeah, I think so. And it's just interesting. I know a lot of artists don't like sharing their process because they're insecure about it or because they feel it takes away from the actual artwork. But I think social media is such a great way to get people really involved. Not to go back to the why the whole time, but kind of. It's a great medium where you can, in various ways, talk about your why without literally all the time saying, this is my why. But, you know, you have different ways of showing what your work is about, and you can give people some insight, which I always say this to artists, as a non-artist, the coolest thing for me is to have a peek like inside your brain and inside your process. You don't understand that there's a lot of people out there that are just sitting behind their computer all day and that do not have a life where they go into a studio and create art. And so to give people insight into all of these things, it's like a little present that you can give to people. It's something really cool that you can share. And social media is just a really cool tool for that.
So as an artist, you are a gateway to a new world for the followers of you.
Yeah, absolutely. I think so. And it's just, it's just an interesting thing that you can share with people. And of course, a real life studio visit is also really cool, but then it's a lot of work, right? You have to get coffee and you can only host so many people at a time. But through social media, you can bring a lot of people into your studio at the same time.
So as you said, a lot of artists don't really want to spend time on it, or they are a little bit afraid of showing their failures. How do you convince them to do it?
Well, I mean, I don't know if I would convince them to do it. It's not for everybody also. So I think it's important also to think about if you sell artworks that are relatively affordable, maybe you make editions and they're maybe not in a super high price point, then social media is a really interesting way to promote that because people will buy artworks from that amount on social media and because you have to sell quite a lot. But if you make huge sculptures, maybe you only have to sell one or two works a year. Maybe social media isn't even that interesting. Maybe your real life, you know, strategy is way more convenient. So I think it's just important to understand all the options that are out there and just the choices that you make in terms of how do you view, you know, which ways are you creating art and which ways are you making money with your art? And then to But to do it with intent. So to figure out like, okay, I am on social media, but I'm not using it to sell anything. I'm just having fun on social media. And for some people, maybe it's more of a marketing and sales tool. And then it's important to think about how do you approach that and how do you use social media as a tool in that respect. So I don't want to convince everybody to go on social media and to become, you know, a great marketing strategist on social media. But I do believe it's a really great tool. And and could work for a lot of artists. It's just for artists, it's complicated also because if you have an exhibition coming up, you have a lot of things that you want to post about and then you have nothing to say for a long time. And it's also not your core business. But when you think of an artist in terms of an entrepreneur, which whether you want to or not, you kind of are, because unless you're represented by a gallery or you have a manager, you know, you're in charge of sending the bills and paying the bills and doing the research and cleaning the toilets and doing the marketing. So one way or the other, you have to, you know, get out there.
Before this talk, you sent me a pamphlet that you made with 15 tips on how to reach the millennial audience. And of course, online is important. I want to mention some things that I read. Like one of them was easy payments, like Tiki. Does it really need to be that easy?
Well, I think it's just in terms of just thinking about who is your target audience. And when you think about millennials, you know, convenience and an easy access to things is really important. You can see it in the success of like the Gorillas and the Gettiers and the other Flitz delivery people. This is a generation that is used to like, oh, I want Ben and Jerry's ice cream right now. And then 10 minutes later, it's at your door. So, and research shows that, more steps people have to take, the more chances there are that they will, you know, get out of the process and abandon their basket. And I think you know that also from yourself. If you're buying something online, you have to jump through a lot of hoops or it's really complicated or, you know, whatever, something goes wrong, you're just like, oh, forget it, you know, I'll get it another time. So I think it's important to think about who is this person that you're selling to and how can you also be of service? Because like I said, when you're an entrepreneur or when it's just you, you're also the salesperson and you're also the cashier. And you know, the easier you make this process, the better it is, I think. And it's not just about like easy payments and a Tiki, of course, maybe is, maybe not the best example, or it's maybe meant with a bit of a wink, but it's also about service. Like maybe you'll offer to help people install it in their home, or maybe you can offer, I don't know, advice on framing if it needs to be framed. And so just think about all these things that the service that you would get in another type of store, like if you're buying a bed or something, whether it's online or offline, and then think about what things can you incorporate in your process as well.
Would you recommend putting the price on, for instance, Instagram?
Yeah, so this is so debatable because I always think it's good to give people an indication of what something costs, because with art, it's different. Like if I buy jeans, I know if I buy them at H&M, they're going to be about 20 or 30 euros. And if I buy them at Levi's, they're going to be 100. And if I buy them at, I don't know, some high-end jeans label, maybe they're 300 euros. So not just me, but people understand these prices. With art, it feels for a lot of people like, I don't know, this is 100 and this is 100,000 and why, I don't know. So it's hard for people to understand these prices. So it's also, well, maybe not the job of the artist, but it is definitely the job of Young Collector Circle to help people understand these prices. Not in terms of, am I making a good investment, but just in terms of, am I paying a reasonable price? But also people think buying art is just super expensive all the time. So if you're posting a work on Instagram and you're telling me it's for sale, I don't know, is it 20 euros? Is it 20,000 euros? It could be anywhere. And it's scary to ask because it's kind of, you're in direct contact with the artist. And if you ask a price and they're like, it's 5,000 euros, you're like, oh, that's a lot. Now I have to reply back. What am I going to say? So it helps people to sort of know a direction, I think. And some people are super open and feel very comfortable posting prices, and they sell a lot of works, and other people are not. But I think it's yeah, the more, how do you say that? The more clues you can give somebody, the easier it will be for them to also actually buy it.
Yeah. One other thing I read is, if you are on your socials or you're putting information on your website, you should think of a fake person to talk to. Can you explain that?
Yeah, it's like they call it a persona in marketing. And so the idea is that often what we do when we are doing something marketing-y on a social channel or even on your website, we kind of talk to everybody. So it's like this old-fashioned idea of marketing, like you throw out a huge net and then you reel it in and you sort of see what fish got stuck. Whereas now, if you kind of know which audience is on which channel, right? On Instagram, it's younger people. On TikTok, it's even younger people. Facebook are the old people. And then LinkedIn are the professionals. So you kind of know the different fish and you kind of know what bait to use as well. So the more specific you are about who you're talking to on what channel, the more people will feel like you're talking to them as well. Whereas if you're trying to keep it general so that everybody feels like, you know, you're trying to make everybody feel like you're talking to them, that's never going to work. And so to me, that is what strategy is all about. You can say my art is for everybody and I want everybody to buy it. But if I want to be successful in a business manner, I'm going to specifically aim for one or two target groups that I will find on this channel, and I will create a persona that I will talk to. And it just helps you in terms of what are the thresholds they experience, or what are the character traits that this person or this generation has. So it's really like writing a character, or like for in a movie. You could be like, okay, this person is, you know, like me. Her name is Ninka. She's 44 years old. She has a family, so she doesn't have a lot of time, and she loves art very much, but she doesn't have time to do all the research, you know? So when you think about a person like that, and you can also see it when you look at brands, how they do it, which I find often inspirational. And I use a lot of examples from the business world because I think, you know, all these tools are out there. Why not use them and, you know, try and incorporate it in your own sort of business strategies?
Another one that's really interesting, that, like you said, like so you have an exhibition and you wanna throw it out there. You want people to come. But then after like three times posting it, you're like, what else can I say about this? But is it a smart thing to do to repeat a message like that? Or what do you recommend?
Well, I don't recommend repeating the same thing all the time, but it's also good to know that only 10% of your followers will see what you post, which is quite a depressing number. Ooh. So it's okay to be repetitive, but just also mix it in with other types of content. But if you have an exhibition, you can post about it in many different ways. You can post about where it is, and you can post about the different artworks you're showing, or you could show yourself at work in the studio creating the artworks for the exhibition. So it's, I think, important to make a nice mix. But it's definitely okay to repeat it every once in a while. Just don't spam people. I think even more importantly is when you have an exhibition or when you do participate in an art fair, for instance, like this art fair, which is an artist, a fair where artists represent themselves, is to not think of it as sort of an endpoint, which we often do, but sort of as a starting point as well. So a lot of times we think about, okay, I have an exhibition. My goal is to get as many people there as possible and to sell works, and then it's over. But I think it's just a great way to start to get to know more people and already think about, so once my exhibition is over, then what are my next steps going to be? So at an art fair or at an exhibition, it's not only your, you know, it shouldn't only be your goal to sell works, which is great if that happens, but also to get, you know, contact information from other people, maybe start a mailing list. And these are all people that are interested in you, that are connecting maybe to your why, if you're sharing that with them while you're talking to them. So it's important to not only think about ways where you bring in new people, but where you also think about how do you maintain the contacts that you already have. And big fancy companies have CRM systems for that, where they manage their contacts. And, you know, you could just start a spreadsheet where you just write down people that you met and just sort of keep track of when was the last time you were in touch with them. Because a lot of times when artists get to invite people for the opening of their show or for an art fair, they say, I have no idea who to invite. I invited my friends, and they always invite their friends, which is great, but they're not going to buy your art, or maybe they do, but it's not, you know, it's not a new collector or new source of income.
Is there free beer?
There's free beer, exactly. And most times they're artists themselves, so they're not going to be able to buy anything. So it's also important to think about, like, who are the people that have been instrumental in your career so far? So who were your favorite teachers at the academy, or who already bought a work from you one time, or who was interested, or what curator talked to you about getting you in a show? So make sure to sort of keep track of the network that you've built. And I think when you think about it, you already find that you know a lot more people than you even remember.
Yeah, a tip I saw also on one of your of the sites you published on was to create your own mailing list, because socials can disappear.
Yes, and also I think mailing lists have made quite a comeback. And a lot of people think of a mailing list as sort of a linear thing, like you have to send it every first of every month, which is not the case at all. Like, if you don't send me a mailing list on December 1st, I won't be mad. I won't be waiting by my mailbox thinking, oh, where's the mailing list? I'm waiting for it. So I think a mailing list is also something a lot of people often use just to send something when something's going on, like an invite for an exhibition. But it's also a great way to keep people posted on what you're doing. And especially as a way to sort of reward the people that are your supporters, you know, you can also send them things that you're working on, or, you know, a podcast that inspired you, or first peek into your new body of work that you've been creating. So I think those are the emails that are most interesting as well when you receive them, that are not just like, come to my exhibition on Friday, but also just as a way to stay connected to people. And when you stay connected to people like that, it's also easier to ask them again. So maybe if you have a crowdfunding campaign or something like that, if you've kept people involved, it's easier to ask them to contribute. And it's easier for somebody that feels involved to also then contribute to such a crowdfunding campaign. Whereas if I've met you one time in an exhibition, I've never heard from you again, and 2 years later, you ask me if I want to contribute to your crowdfunding, I'd be like, huh, okay, where did that come from? You know, who is this person again? So I think those are all, and I realize it's a lot of work. But those are all things to just consider, what works for you and what is easy for you to do. And for some people, writing an email to a mailing list may seem like a horrible job, but they're super confident in grabbing their phone and recording a great TikTok. So also think about the strategy that works for you.
Make it fun for yourself.
Exactly, because I think that's the only way to make it sustainable, because it's just a lot of work. And maybe sometimes you'll, I don't know, get really excited about a certain social media channel and you post a lot, but in the end, it's just not something, you know, that you can maintain. So just make sure that when you choose something, you stick with it and you really give it a chance and you put a lot of energy into it. But and make sure you don't choose too many things to do, because that makes it really hard.
You mentioned different social media networks. Is LinkedIn a good one to use?
LinkedIn is definitely interesting, because a lot of people are on LinkedIn, and also, of course, a lot of curators. And what I like about LinkedIn is that you can, you know, you can post your content, but you can also make a direct contact with somebody. And when you add somebody as a connection and they accept your request, then you're immediately in contact with them and you can send them direct messages. And what a lot of artists do, which is not always the best idea, not just artists, by the way, I get a lot of LinkedIn messages like that, is then people will pop immediately into your DMs and be like, hi, this is what I'm doing, blah, blah, blah. And it's kind of aggressive. I always compare it to when you go into a shop and you're like, hey, I need a coat. And they're like, okay, here's a coat. There's the register. Go pay for it. Bye. You know, that's not how you want to be approached, right? So I always try to find a way to use these connections in a sensible way where I'm not being overly aggressive. So maybe first I'll just drop them a little note on LinkedIn and say, really interesting what you do. Nice to have made a connection. And then if I have something I want to ask them or give them or share with them, maybe I'll ask for their email address. So you also give people the opportunity to tell you if they're not interested. But it is a great way to build a network and to grow your connections. So yeah, definitely. But it also depends on who you're looking for. You know, if you're not interested in curators and museums and stuff like that, then maybe LinkedIn is not that important.
So we talked a lot about online reaching an online audience. In our first episodes, I talked with four artists, and to my surprise, they were all not really interested. They were not really trying to be represented by a gallery. What do you think about that?
That's interesting because I've really seen that change the last years. First, when people would maybe graduate from an arts academy, they were really focused on trying to find a gallery. And now it's just changing a little bit. I think also the way galleries is changing a bit in terms of how they work with artists. A lot of times they'll not necessarily be exclusive with artists like they were before, but work with different artists. I mean, right now, a gallery can still be super instrumental because it is a gateway to collectors, but also to these other people that inhabit the art world that are important for your career, like critics and curators. And a good gallery has that network and can connect you with that network and can give you a platform also internationally because, except for the few art fairs where artists can represent themselves, like this art fair, every art fair, you can only join as a gallery. So if you want to be part of Art Rotterdam, if you want to be seen as unseen as a photographer, you have to have a gallery that takes you there. So in that respect, galleries are super important. But I also think it's good that artists are not committing immediately to an exclusive relationship with a gallery right away. And I understand that as well, because there's so many different routes now that you can explore as an artist that it seems kind of silly to immediately join a gallery and then, and then go for that. And on the other hand, there are quite a few galleries in the Netherlands, but there are so many artists that there's not even space for every, you know, galleries are quite strict about who they want to select as well.
One artist that I spoke in my research for the series, he told me that he bought a stand at this art fair and it cost him around 1,000 euros. I'm not sure about the number, but it sounds so expensive. Is that a smart thing to do when you are an artist and you don't have a gallery?
I mean, I believe so. I really like this art fair. I have to say, I also, for the past 2 years, have coached a group of artists on their behalf in the preparation in the run-up to this art fair. So just saying that as a disclaimer. But what I like about this art fair is that for people, it's a way to engage directly with the artist. Whereas when you go to another type of art fair, often you're talking to the gallerist, which is also interesting, but it's really cool to meet the artists themselves. It also is the case that with this art fair, they have a great network. They know all the corporate collections, the big collectors, the museums, the curators, and a lot of those people also come to this art fair. So it's definitely a great way in real life to meet more people. And also, like I was saying before, it's a great way to sort of not see it, I say that to the coaches all the time, not see it as an endpoint of like, I'm here at the fair and now I'm going to sell my work. But it's also a starting point of building this new network and then maintaining that network. Because a lot of times, maybe someone you met at this art fair 2 years later will buy a work, or 5 years later will invite you to be part of an exhibition somewhere. So a lot of these things are viewed more as short-term things, like I'm going to a fair and sell my work. But when you view them in light of a long-term strategy, it's often even more successful. So it's an investment, and in that manner, it's quite risky. But I also know most of the artists at this art fair usually make them their stand money and their other costs back, and oftentimes even more. So, yeah, but in terms of a smart business decision, I definitely think so.
Mm. And what do you think of organizing an exposition on your own?
I mean, that's a great way. And I think it's even really important for people to do, because when you're not part of a gallery system, you know, you have to find ways to show your work, right? So one way to do it is to host studio visits and to invite people to come to those studio visits. I know someone who invites like the people that have bought a work from them and then ask them to bring friends, which is so smart, because if that one person likes the work, likely they have other friends that will also like the work. So even if it's not a full-blown exhibition, just to have an open gallery, and there's all these open gallery tours anyway in the big cities, but just to have an open gallery or an open studio sometimes is a great idea. Yeah, to organize an exhibition on your own or with a group is of course a great way to be noticed, because it's hard to, you know, be noticed if you're not in a museum or in a gallery.
Yeah. You said museums. What is their role in this?
So you have project spaces and museums, and so their role is a little bit different. This is my personal view of things. I'm not saying it is exactly like this, but to me, a project space is something more also for younger artists, more experimental. So it also draws a bit of a different crowd, and a museum is more the established artists and tastes. It's not entirely true, because a lot of times museums will also give opportunities to younger artists, but that's sort of like the buildup in a way. So museums attract maybe even a different crowd sometimes from a project space. You know, like if you are not necessarily an art lover, but you're going to Paris, you're probably going to go maybe to Centre Pompidou, even though you're not really that interested in contemporary or modern art. So it is very relevant for artists to be seen in all these different spaces, because in terms of your market value, not just in the appreciation for your work, but also your market value, sort of the more boxes you can tick off, the more expensive the work becomes, right? So if you win prizes and awards, or if you participate in biennales or in museum exhibitions, the more of these things that you can put on your resume, the more relevant you become for a larger group of people. So I think all of these elements together sort of creates your CV.
Yeah, okay. So Nienke, we've come to this end. So Nienke, we've come to the end of this episode. Is there anything you would like to share?
I think what I would like to share is that I would encourage artists, kind of like how I started, I want to encourage artists to not be afraid of thinking in a more entrepreneurial way, or back away from anything that they maybe feel is too commercial, because I think it's perfectly manageable to separate your artistic process as an as a process that stands in itself from then the result of that process, the artwork, bringing that into the greater art world and onto the art market. So don't be afraid to explore what your best business strategy is, because in the end, maybe you've been put on this planet to create arts, but you cannot live without paying the rent or buying food. So I think this idea, which also a lot of times in the academies is still sort of the vibe of an artist when they think about their business or when they think about marketing, are often thought of as being super commercial. And I hope that in this podcast you found a couple of different ways of how you can still be authentic and true to your artistic practice, but also practice your skills in putting it out to the world a little bit better.
Thanks for your inspiration. I'm really inspired myself now, so thank you for that.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah. Also, thanks to the Tolhuistuin, where we are recording right now. We put a link to Nienke's site in the show notes. And thank you for listening. The next episode will follow in 1 month. Make sure to listen to our early episodes as well. Bye.